Hello, hello. Thank you for being with us today. I'm excited for today's episode, but wanted to take a quick moment to talk about prenatal vitamins. As a doula, I encourage my clients to achieve optimal nutrition through food. However, even with the most thoughtfully planned diet, it is nearly impossible to meet the daily requirements through food alone. Ideally, you should start taking a prenatal before you find out you're pregnant, or as soon as you test positive. P.S. If this is you, congrats. Prenatal vitamins help nourish and support your body while helping you grow that cute little human inside. Nutrients like choline and folate in prenatal vitamins support healthy brain and spinal cord development in early stages of pregnancies. Prenatal vitamins are unfortunately not all made the same. My favorite prenatal brand is called Needed. I first discovered them through our Facebook community, actually. They are very supportive of our community and have secured 20% off to all of our mamas with code VBAC20. Go to thisisneeded.com and enter in code VBAC, VBAC20 at checkout for 20% off. Hello, women of strength. I am so excited for today's guest. Our friend Julia is from Texas. She is a wife and a stay-at-home mother. Living in, is it Spring, Texas, Julia?
Spring, Texas, close to Houston.
Yes, with her two sons. And she has had a cesarean and then an HVAC. And one of the biggest questions, but really we get a lot of questions in our inbox every day. But a really common question is dates. Hey, I'm 40 weeks. My doctor's telling me I had to have my baby like by tomorrow. Or even approaching 39 weeks, people are being told they have to have their babies, or really bad things will happen. And Julia's story is here proof that you don't have to have a baby by 40 weeks or 41 weeks. Would you say almost 42 weeks is what you were, right? So we are excited to hear this story. And I know if you are one that goes past your due date and you're getting that pressure, you're definitely going to want to listen.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you much. Thank you so much for having me, Megan. I'm really, really happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you are here. I would just love to have you share your stories.
Okay, so my firstborn, he came during the height of the COVID pandemic. It was August 2020, and I just saw my OB that I had been seeing for regular gynecology visits. And from the very first appointment, I just kind of got an off feeling, like she had seen a small subchorionic hematoma on my ultrasound at my very first appointment at 8 weeks. And she just told me, like, don't Google this. It's going to scare you.
Yeah.
And basically just said, just enjoy being pregnant now, because when you come back next week, I may not be. So as a first-time mom, it was just obviously, you know, pretty upsetting and caused a lot of anxiety. When I went back for my next appointment, she just kind of shrugged it off after she saw the ultrasound. She just said it cleared up on its own. There really wasn't any explanation of how it resolved. But that being said, that start to my prenatal care kind of set the tone for the rest of that pregnancy and birth. And from then on, there was just a lot of fear-mongering going on, and a lot of problems were brought up that really never turned out to be an issue. Around 20 weeks, at the anatomy scan, they saw that my son was in the bottom 10th percentile, and she had said that she classified that as IUGR, intrauterine growth restriction. We had a lot of extra testing done. Everything was normal. And so I felt confident and very comfortable just waiting it out. And that really wasn't what she wanted. Actually, starting around 35 weeks, she had started talking about delivering early. I was like pressured at each appointment by my OB and the nurses to stay that day and deliver solely because of his size, even though everything was looking great on the monitors. Keep in mind, you know, during COVID, I wasn't able to have my husband or anyone with me during these appointments. And so just being asked that question each time I came in as a first-time mom by myself was just really hard and made me second guess a lot of, you know, a lot of things and second guess my intuition. You know, I had explained that I think he's just a small baby. He needs more time to grow. And she basically just said, at my 38-week appointment, she had said something. She said, if I didn't deliver that day, it would not be her fault if my baby died, and that like she or the hospital wasn't right. She said that she or the hospital, like if I walk out that day, they're not liable. Like if something happens because I'm going against her recommendations. I was even seeing like a high risk doctor as well at that point. And even he was saying like, everything's looking fine. There's no problem with waiting if you want to. And the reason she wanted to schedule the C-section is because he was breech. So I knew that I wasn't even going to have the opportunity to go into spontaneous labor. You know, there was really no alternatives presented at the time. I knew nothing about out of hospital birth or about, you know, midwives. She really didn't even, well, she offered an ECV, but she said she didn't recommend it because of his size. She didn't really explain why. So I just kind of felt backed into a corner. And I remember calling my husband. I had left the office that day at 38 weeks and called my husband immediately and explained what she had said. And we just kind of felt like, okay, well, I guess, you know, we obviously don't want our baby to die. So maybe we need to just stay. And I remember just kind of pushing my gut feeling aside the whole time. Like as they were prepping me, I just felt like this isn't right. You know, I wanted to give my baby more time to grow and also to flip so that I wouldn't be backed into a C-section. But, you know, had I had known then what I know now, I definitely would have opted for a home birth with my midwife who's trained in breech delivery. Just at the time with COVID, I didn't have the resources or the information. But so we went through with the C-section that ended in a 4-day hospital stay. And I didn't sleep at all, Megan, I'm not even kidding you. Like I did not sleep those 4 days. The nurses were really concerned about the baby's size, even though he was growing. And he was actually back to his birth weight by the time we were discharged. But I'll never forget this one.
That's quick.
Right. I know. And so there was so much like fear mongering, so much uncertainty by medical staff, despite how great my baby was doing. And I remember this nurse frantically coming into the room just a few hours after my C-section and with this pump, like the Medela, you know, hospital grade pump. And she was just like, you need to start pumping now on top of breastfeeding because your baby's small. He's not going to grow. And it just kind of left me feeling like, you know, I feel confident in what I'm doing, but now all these medical professionals are telling me like I'm in danger. My baby's in danger. And it just was, it, you know, triggered a lot of feelings of postpartum anxiety. And I really struggled that first year. And so it wasn't a very good experience. I just felt like my power had been taken away in the birthing process and just kind of felt defeated and like I didn't have a say for my first birth.
Yeah. You know, when it, I was just listening to an episode the other day, not on our podcast, on another podcast, about that experience after baby is born and that like postpartum within the hospital and how crazy it is that sleep is one of the best things we can get when it comes to like energy, milk production, getting our babies fed and helping them grow, doing all these things, but then we're not allowed that time. And then on top of it, it's all the fear mongering and the doubt when it's like, we should be being built up. Like, oh my gosh, look how good you're doing. Look how good this baby's doing. Look how good you're doing. Let's keep doing this. Instead of like doubt, making you doubt that what you're doing isn't good enough and not letting you sleep and doing all these things. Like it's just weird to me. It doesn't make sense.
Right. And as a first time mom, you're just kind of like, okay, I'm, you know, they know what's best, obviously. you know, I'm going to listen to them. And, you know, what do I know about birth? Like, they're the doctors. But yeah, it was just really eye-opening. And I really knew I wanted a completely different experience the next time around.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you wanting a different experience.
So after I had my C-section, pretty soon after that, I started digging and doing a lot of research and realized I felt really cheated by like the lack of informed consent. I had mentioned that my doctor just had said, you know, you need a C-section because he's breech. And I had no idea that there were even midwives or, you know, out of hospital birth options that, you know, where they delivered breech vaginally. And not only that, but were highly trained and qualified to do so. I had no idea that in other parts of the world, you know, of similar economic status to the US, that they were routinely delivering breech babies vaginally, you know, with better outcomes than we have here, you know, in the US hospitals. So I really didn't feel like there was informed consent there. Even the fact that she didn't even want to try the ECV was upsetting to me. And I just felt like I really wish I would have done more research at the time. But, you know, I just put all my energy into this next birth. And I knew even before I got pregnant that I wanted a VBAC. And pretty early on in the process of my research, I became really fascinated with physiological birth. And I knew that I really wanted to experience that. So for someone that may not be familiar with that term, physiological birth is natural, unmedicated childbirth with no intervention unless, you know, medically necessary. And it sees birth as like a safe biological function rather than a medical event or, you know, something that could, that's, you know, inherently dangerous, which is how I felt like I was treated my whole first pregnancy and birth. I kind of just felt like a walking hazard, to be honest, when in reality, I was an extremely healthy, you know, 25-year-old first-time mom with a healthy baby with no issues. So the fact that I was kind of like gaslit into thinking this was, you know, there was a lot of danger there, was kind of sad. So I knew that for my next birth, I wanted to do a physiological birth, and I knew that it would kind of be a fight to achieve in the hospital. I did a lot of research. I watched The Business of Being Born. I read a lot of natural childbirth books. And I also knew that I would have, on top of, you know, the regular hospital policies, I would have some excess restrictions because of the fact that I was a VBAC.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did go back to that same OB at first. I presented my birth plan early on to her, and it included things like I didn't want an IV. I wanted freedom to eat or drink. I didn't want any drugs, you know, whatsoever for like pain relief. I didn't, you know, want them pushing an epidural. I would have liked a water birth, but I knew that wouldn't have been possible in the hospital. But I at least would have liked water immersion in labor, you know, minimal cervical checks. I wanted to go into spontaneous labor. You know, I wanted no coached pushing and like fully delayed cord clamping. I could tell right away she was more so just VBAC tolerant rather than supportive. She really used a lot of fear mongering. You know, right away she mentioned the uterine rupture risk. She had just had a mom die from a VBAC not too long ago.
Goodness. Without any like moly.
Without any explanation, like who knows, you know, who knows where she was going with that. But she had also said, you know, it may be better to just have a repeat C-section because, you know, with the risk of rupture, you may need a hysterectomy after giving birth. You know, she commonly used the word TOLAC, which also I didn't really like. I didn't want to feel like I was having to try, you know, like I felt like I'm planning a VBAC. Like I don't need to like try for it. Like it is what it is. And I wanted someone to encourage me. She really also highly, highly recommended I got an epidural because she said, well, you know, with your increased risk of rupture, if something should happen, then they're just going to have to knock me out. She also said like unmedicated moms tear the worst, which was not at all the case for me. She was like saying that because it hurts so bad that you just can't control your pushing. And I knew all of this was not true. You know, I was kind of in a funny position because I didn't want to be like fighting with her, but I knew the evidence in the back of my mind. And I just like all of that scary language, I knew it was not evidence-based. And I really wanted someone on my team that was really going to believe in me that knew the evidence and that believed in my ability to have a VBAC. And I didn't want to spend all of my energy and labor fighting for this VBAC and for this birth experience that I knew was possible and that I knew that I deserved. My heart really had always deep down been set on a home birth from the very beginning. I loved watching home birth videos and hearing positive home birth stories. I just loved everything about it, and also about like the midwifery model of care and how much more comprehensive that was. And I had heard about a local group of midwives on a Facebook group that I'm in for holistic moms in my area. And I found out that this group of midwives offered a hypnobirthing class. So my husband and I signed up for that, and we took the 6-week course, and we just never looked back after that. We knew that a home birth VBAC would be the way to go. That's really, I felt deep in my heart confident about it, and that's really what I wanted. And I just knew I had found my dream birth team. My midwife was just amazing, and I just really couldn't imagine birthing anywhere other than in my own home with her and my husband by my side, and someone that didn't look at me differently because of my previous cesarean.
Right. And I love that you just pointed that out. Someone who didn't look at me differently because of my previous cesarean. This is the problem, not the problem. It's one of the many problems when it comes to providers looking at VBAC moms. Like, we talk about this in our VBAC course. We should just be someone going in and having a baby, but we are not viewed that way. And it's extremely frustrating because not only do they not view us that way, they make us know and feel that they don't view us that way.
Right.
Right? It's just, it feels crummy.
Absolutely. And so, you know, we knew we were making the right decision, and I was really excited about the whole thing. Like, that was another thing that I talked to my OB about. I was like, I'm excited to be in labor. Like, I want to welcome all these sensations of birth. Like, I know it's going to be hard work, but, you know, I want, you know, that experience means something to me, and I want that. And she like had said, well, if you ask other moms who had been through labor, like, they would say it's painful. Like, it's hard. Like, you basically saying I shouldn't want this birth experience. And, you know, I just didn't want to be fighting that or dealing with someone that kind of had this view on birth that it's just like this dangerous medical event. And I didn't want to go through feeling defeated like I did last time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good for you for recognizing that and then doing what you needed to do to not have that experience.
All right. Thank you.
Taking a quick break to continue our earlier conversation about the importance of the right prenatals for pregnancy and beyond. As I mentioned, my favorite brand is Needed. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally intensive times for a woman's life. You don't have to feel so terribly nauseated or so depleted in the postpartum stage. A prenatal multi that optimally nourishes you can make all the difference between just getting by during and after pregnancy and feeling your very best. Let's not just survive, we definitely need and deserve to thrive. Needed is clinically backed, third-party tested, and formulated the best, in my opinion, prenatal vitamins. They took so much time to learn about women and why we are getting the bare minimum nutrients, and then designed the supplements that addresses women's needs at every stage of pregnancy and beyond. Needed's prenatals are filled with the optimal amount for both you and your baby and include important ingredients such as choline, folate, vitamin D, and more. Enjoy 20% off at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20. Back to today's episode.
So I had mentioned, you know, that I really wanted to go into spontaneous labor. I didn't want to be induced at all. And so that's another reason why I'm so thankful that I was with my midwife, because I went almost all the way to 43 weeks pregnant. I went into labor at 42 weeks and 5 days in the middle of the night. Had I had been with my OB, I'm positive that I would have had to deliver much earlier, and I would have probably been scheduled for a repeat C-section. So I'm just really happy that I was with my midwife and I felt really confident about waiting. I had NSTs and BPPs, non-stress test and biophysical profiles done daily, starting at 42 weeks, just to monitor baby's health and to make sure that everything is normal. And it was. So, we just opted to wait for spontaneous labor. And I'm really glad that I did so that I could go through with the home birth.
Absolutely. This, what you were saying, like, yeah, I know I probably would have been scheduled for a cesarean and definitely would have been pressured. I mean, even if you would have said no, the pressure would have been thick, especially going over 40, 42 or 41 weeks, I mean.
Right.
And
And
then let alone 42.
right. Yeah, and so the pressure was there like from just not nope, everyone was well-intentioned like asking, "Have you had your baby yet?" But I mean, I was getting these questions as early as like 38 weeks, 39 weeks. And I'm like, "Whoa, I'm not even at my due date yet." So, everyone was just excited to meet the baby and, I had friends asking about that, but my immediate family was so supportive and I'm so happy that I had that support because, just feeling that from my midwife and from, my parents and my husband, knowing that they all really believed in me and were confident with waiting as long as everything looked good with baby, that was really what was most important. So I just kind of tuned everything else out and, tried to relax as much as possible. We, just went out to dinner a few times and just kind of cherished this last, like these last couple weeks as a family of three. And it finally happened in the middle of the night at 42 weeks and 5 days. And I remember when it first started, like the contractions were first starting. I'd had like some contractions on and off, like for the past few weeks, but nothing consistent. So I just kind of thought, oh, okay, well, this is just like some Braxton Hicks or something like that. And I noticed that it started getting around 2 a.m. they started getting more consistent. And I told my husband, and they were getting more intense and a little closer together. So, we called our midwife around 6 a.m. and she's like, "Yeah, it sounds like you're in early labor." So I was just so happy and grateful to be in labor. And yes, it was hard work, but I can honestly say I really enjoyed the experience. I thought it was, extremely empowering. And I just remember like thanking God, like through the surges, we call them surges in hypnobirthing, just like knowing the awesome work that that my body was doing from within to, give birth to my baby. And I really, really enjoyed like the freedom of just being able to eat and drink and labor freely wherever I wanted in my home without any restricting policies. I wasn't like tethered to any, IVs or monitors. I think that's another thing, like in the hospital, that would have added anxiety, just like seeing the monitor constantly. We know that continuous fetal monitoring isn't really evidence-based, like, and it leads to more C-sections. So I knew in the hospital that would have been something that would have been required. So I'm really glad that that wasn't the case at home. And I just think like the freedom and the autonomy is really what helped my labor to progress so smoothly without any complications. There wasn't like, people coming in and out of my room, and I just really enjoyed the whole experience. Just kind of like listening to birth affirmations helped me. I was like swaying through the surges. My husband had helped me put up like twinkle fairy lights in our room, and we had some like flickering votive candles like on my dresser, and it just created this really nice ambiance, like a calming atmosphere. And it just felt so good to know that my husband really truly believed in my ability to do this. I mean, I really have to give him a shout out because he was like right there with me, not only through all of labor, but like when I knew that I wanted a VBAC from the very beginning, he was right there with me reading all the natural childbirth books, doing all the research on VBAC with me, and he was just really supportive. So that's something I would say is very important for like a VBAC mom, to have a support person that's not just like present but truly supportive of you, and knows what you're going to need and does the work with you ahead of time so that you can just focus on laboring and they can be there to make sure you have water, you're fed if you're hungry. So I was really blessed to have him and to have his full support.
Absolutely. My husband, told me, he said, I just don't understand. He just didn't understand. And I get that he didn't understand, but I love hearing this where it's like, we're learning together. And even, I want to say to couples, like, or to partners, even if you don't understand, understand and trust that it's important to your partner and be there for them. Because like you were saying, it can make such a big impact in the way you feel, the way you view your birth, and your overall experience.
Right. No, and that's so true, you know, because I feel like most people's support person is their husband. And so a lot of men feel like maybe they can't really help as much, or kind of just say, well, you know, the doctor knows what to do. Like, I'm just here, like, for emotional support. But it's so much more than that. You know, my husband learned ahead of time, like, how to do counter pressure. And I really didn't need, and I think he had done it once, but what really helped me the most was just like leaning on him. I did that most of the time, just like leaning into him, letting him support my weight. And he also did a really great job of like reminding me to just focus on my breathing techniques and just relaxing between the surges. So all of those like natural pain relief remedies were really, really helful. I had bought like a TENS machine and like a heating pad, but I ended up not needing any of those. So
yeah, but you at least were prepared with them.
I was, yeah, I was definitely prepared. We also had hung up all my birth affirmations. We had done like a lot of meditation and visualization exercises throughout pregnancy. And so I used some of those as well. You know, he was really great at reminding me, you know, just honestly, just saying like, I love you, you're doing it, you're doing a great job was very helpful. Just feeling him there. So,
yeah, absolutely. So with postpartum, this is also another common question, is it better postpartum from my cesarean versus my VBAC? What would you say, and any tips that you have for healing through your VBAC?
Yeah, so my postpartum experience this time around is so much better. I mean, it's like a night and day difference. Not just like physically healing, like that, you know, my VBAC is like nothing compared to the C-section. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, fail to realize that C-section is like major, major abdominal surgery. And if anyone else that had major abdominal surgery would be sent home to be on bed rest for weeks. And you have to care for a newborn on top of that. And with my C-section, that was the first time, you know, I was a first time mom. And so it was so overwhelming. Everything was new to me. I had a lot of pain with like breastfeeding at first. And I attribute a lot of that to just the nurses making me pump. Like, I was never sized for like flanges. I just used like the ones that came with the medulla, and you know, they weren't sized to me. And I think that caused like a lot of nipple damage. I ended up getting mastitis at 2 weeks postpartum the first time around, and had to go back into the hospital for that. And just had so much pain with latching that I ended up exclusively pumping for my son. And I'm really proud because I was able to do that for 2 years. So he had breast milk for 2 years.
That is a commitment.
Yes, it was such a commitment, but I'm really, really happy that I did it. And, you know, it was worth it to me. And I just didn't want that negative experience of the birth and like all that damage that happened early on from the pump to like affect, you know, this, because I really knew I wanted to breastfeed, and I was able to do it with exclusive pumping. And then this time around, it was just so much better. You know, breastfeeding is going great. And I've seen some research on that too. Just like when you have a positive birth experience, how that can also affect breastfeeding and even like the first latch and everything, like just like your emotions surrounding postpartum. Like when you go through something like that and you feel supported and like in charge of your birth, you go into like motherhood feeling the same way.
Yeah.
And I can't explain how much better it is this time around. And that's why I really encourage all moms to know that, you know, you can do your own research, and especially VBAC moms, like there's so much out there about, you know, you just hear about uterine rupture. And when you look at like the relative risk versus the absolute risk, like these are the kinds of things that you may not know to do. because, you know, your doctor is just going to present the statistics one way, but we know that that the way that those statistics are presented really greatly impacts what decision you make. And it's important to understand that. And so I would say my biggest tip for VBAC moms is to just really do your own research and find a provider that you feel like in your gut is going to be there for you, is going to really believe in you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I was looking for with my crazy interview process, was someone that I didn't just think would be there to be there, but be there to support me and really root for me and really be on my team, not just there. And I just think it makes such a big, big difference. And kind of going away from provider, but kind of coming into due date, waiting longer. And when I say longer, past the traditional 39 to 41 weeks. Now, you were mentioning people were even saying at 38 weeks, hey, like, have you had your baby yet? When are you going to have your baby? What? Oh my gosh. And these people, most of the time, I would say 99% of the time, they really just are excited for you to have your baby. And so if you're listening and maybe you have this situation, do say things like, hey, oh my gosh, I'm just so excited for you. Not like, when are you going to have this baby? Because it does start taking a toll sometimes on mom's mental health at the end. But I wanted to also talk a little bit about due dates, because evidence-based birth, Rebecca Decker, she's incredible. If you guys don't know them yet, go check out evidence-based birth. They've got a lot of really great blogs. But there is just a little part of a large blog that I wanted to read about. And it says, her little like bullet point says, so is the traditional due date really your due date? And I think this just fits so well here, because when was your, I mean, you were 42 weeks, which day again?
42 weeks and 5 days.
5 days. That's what I was thinking. So 42 weeks, 5 days. So obviously your traditional due date that you were given like weeks before that wasn't really true, right? So it says, based on the best evidence, there is no such thing as an exact due date. And the estimated due date of 40 weeks is not accurate. Instead, it would be more appropriate to say that there is a normal range of time in which most people give birth. After half of all pregnant people will go into labor on their own by 40 weeks and 5 days for first-time mothers, or 40 weeks and 3 days for mothers who have given birth before. The other half will not. And then it says, are there some things that can make your pregnancy longer? Says, by far the most important predictor of a longer pregnancy is family history of long pregnancies, including your own personal history, your mother, your sisters, etc. The history of the baby's biological father's family history as well. It talks about in 2013, there was a large study that was looked at with more than 475,000 Swedish births, and most of which were dated with an ultrasound before 20 weeks, that they found that genetics had increasingly strong influence on your chance of giving birth after 42 weeks. Okay. Wow. There's so much more, you guys. It talks about if you've had post-term birth before, you have a 4.4 times more likely chance of having another post-term, if I can read, with the same partner. If you've had post-term birth before, then you switch partners, you have a 3.4 times the chance of having another post-term birth with your new partner. And if your sister had a post-term birth, you have a 1.8 times the chance of having a post-term birth. You guys, it goes on and on and on. This is such a great article and eye-opening, in my opinion. I'm going to attach it in the show notes. And it does continue to go on for risk for mothers, risk for infants. What about stillbirth? Because we know that is a huge topic when it comes to going past your due date. Just like uterine rupture is a huge topic for VBAC, I feel like when due dates come in, it's stillbirth. And She actually says that it says up until the 1980s, some research thought that the risk of stillbirth past 41 to 42 weeks was similar to the risk of stillbirth earlier. You know, and she's going to go back and talk with how it definitely is a different measurement here, but the stats are there, the evidence is there. But look at you, you went, you trusted your body, you went with your body, you did what you needed to do to take extra precautions and had a beautiful, beautiful experience.
Yeah, I'm really happy that I did, you know, trust my intuition and I did the research, you know, all those things that you were talking about, like risk of stillbirth, everything that you hear, like you, there's a common thing that goes around social media, like, oh, nothing good happens past 40 weeks, but that's just not the case. And, you know, if you look at other countries that are like very similar in economic status to us in the U.S., like due dates are calculated differently everywhere. And so who's to say that, you know, this like mythical 40 week due date is, you know, the end all be all. Like a lot of other countries, they won't even induce prior to 42 weeks unless there's like an issue. And in the US, we see so many people routinely getting induced at 39 weeks. And so I just think it's really a cultural thing. And so we come to believe that it's, you know, the safest thing. But when you kind of step back and do your own research, you can get a full picture and you can see like, well, why are we inducing without any contraindication? Like, why are people being presented like cesarean section as if it's just like a minor, you know, a minor procedure. Like I feel like that, like the Business of Being Born documentary, if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend everybody watching it really, because it just kind of shows like how C-sections have just become so much more popular and, you know, the reasons why they think that is and just, you know, the flaws in the medical system. And it was just really eye-opening and really encouraged me on my VBAC journey. Gave me a lot of tips and information and led me to find other resources, like VBAC Facts was another really great thing that I referenced a lot, evidence-based birth, like you had mentioned. And then of course, listening to the VBAC link and podcasts of moms who have really positive VBAC stories, because you only hear like the negative a lot of the time. And just with birth in general, you know, I feel like it's just presented as such a scary thing. And I really want to encourage women to know that, you know, birth is made, it's made to be this way. Like it doesn't have to be some scary out of control thing where, you know, you're at the mercy of a doctor or a provider, like telling you, you know, when to push or, you know, telling you to do something that you don't feel comfortable doing. And that when we trust nature and we surrender to the power of labor, it's, you know, it's really sacred. It's beautiful. It's normal. And most of all, it's safe in most cases. You know, we don't have to fight it or medicalize it. And in the words of Ricky Lake, who gave birth in her bathtub in that stellar documentary, Business of Being Born, she had said, you know, birth is not an illness. It's not something that needed to be numbed. Like it needed to be experienced. And so for anyone that's planning or would like to plan, you know, an unmedicated birth, you can get a lot of resistance or people that don't understand. But I really encourage you to know that you can do it, that women have been doing it for generations. And, you know, just keep those affirmations in your mind and believe in yourself. You have to do that.
Exactly. I love that you pointed that out. And there are so many times that we do treat birth as this medical event, this illness, this problem. And it's just not. It's not. It's not. I don't know what else to say. It is not. And we have to change our view. And just like you were saying, it's a cultural thing. Like we have to change or it's not, it's just not going to get better. It could get worse. Like this is, we're seeing the cesarean rate. We're seeing these things happen and there's a problem. There's a problem out there. And we have to start stepping back and realizing that birth is not that medical event and we can trust this process and our bodies were meant to do this and they do it every day, all over the world. Every single day a baby is born, you know, thousands. I don't even know the exact number, but we can do this. We don't have to treat it like that.
Right. And that's
Yeah.
what I really liked about the midwifery model of care. It was just so different to my experience with my OB. And I think a lot of people fail to realize that in most other parts of the world, like low risk women are attended by midwives, and the obstetricians are there to take care of the, you know, the percentage of women that are having issues. And, you know, with home birth, you can think, oh, well, what if something goes wrong and you're not in the hospital setting? But what a lot of people don't realize is that oftentimes these interventions that are routinely done in the hospital, that most of the time they don't even ask for permission to do, or they present it in a way that like they're helping you, actually lead to some of these devastating consequences, like low risk women going in and then ending up with a C-section for reasons that they often can't even understand. And so that's something that I really feel passionate about, is just encouraging women to, you know, advocate for yourself and to know ahead of time, like, what is routine and why are they offering this? Is this for your benefit or for the doctor's benefit? And, you
Yeah.
know, with the risk of like, of all these risks of these different things that can happen, like, you know, Pitocin, which is commonly used to induce or augment labor, like, you might not need that. Or did you know that if they start it, that you can ask for them to shut it off? Like, you know, you should be in charge of your birth. And just when you're in that setting, it can be intimidating, and you might feel like you don't have a voice, especially when you're already in a vulnerable position in labor. So
Yeah.
I was really confident with my midwife's ability to, you know, look out for anything that may go wrong. But I loved that her hands-off approach. She didn't intervene. She just stood back and was just like there to witness. And, you know, there was no like telling me when to push. I was able to like experience the fetal ejection reflex, which was really cool. I just felt my body like pushing for me and just surrendered to that. And, you know, she was there to make sure that everything was going smoothly. But I was the one that, you know, picked my baby up out of the water. And she kind of just stood back while my husband and my baby and I, you know, met each other for the first time. And so it was just all really special. And that's something, you know, I want to say, like, with the risk of like uterine rupture that you hear about with VBAC, that wasn't even like in my mind. You know, I didn't have someone there constantly telling me like, oh, well, like, we're seeing this on the monitor, like, you know, or scaring me with the very, very slim chance of rupture.
Exactly. Oh, so many good tips, such a great story. And I am just so grateful that you are here today sharing it with us.
I'm really grateful to be here and to share my story with everybody.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.